Thank you for joining Rosie on the House. Normally this hour, we take as many of your homeowner questions as possible. Today, we're playing some of our favorite moments from the last year. As many of you know, we've added an extra hour talking with all kinds of guests from the Arizona Game and Fish Department to Dr. Dean talking history or whatever Rosie finds interesting that week. This hour, we thought we'd give you a sample of one of those fun guests that we find. Remember, you can always find our podcasts at rosieonthehouse.com. Here's Rosie with the Meteorite Men.
The way we decide what we're going to talk about on the show is we just get around our conference table and we brainstorm topics. And sometimes that kind of revolves around current events. Sometimes it just revolves around things we're curious about. Recently, something we're curious about turned into a current event when the meteorite blazed in over the top of Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually had a listener call in as an eyewitness. He had seen it driving from, I think, Maricopa to Mesa. And he said, "Rosie, when I saw it, the entire sky turned green. Then there was this flash. Then there was this sonic boom. And then you saw the explosion." He said, "I could have sworn it hit downtown Mesa."
I'll be joining.
Now, so Jennifer says, "Who could we get on air to talk about meteorites?" And I said, "Well, we've got Steve Cates, Dr. Sky. He's always a great interview." Yeah, he is. I love Dr. Sky. But we stumbled across this television show, Meteorite Men. And how could you not want someone from Meteorite Men Television to be on the program? She called, the publicist called us back and said, "Jeff Notkin of the Meteorite Men, he's an Emmy-winning television producer and host, award-winning author, global traveler, and owner of the largest meteorite company in the universe." How could you not want Jeff Notkin, right? Let's bring Jeff into the conversation. He's joining us by phone this morning. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning, Rosie. I think that's the best intro I've ever had. Thank you for that.
You're the most famous person we've ever had.
Oh, you're too kind.
Man.
I like that largest meteorite company in the universe.
In the universe.
That's a really good tagline.
Yes, something to say about that, right?
It'll be right till it's proven wrong.
That's right.
You know, we say the same thing because one of the things we use on our website is we ship anywhere in the known universe. So I'm always waiting for some alien civilization to call and go, "Yeah, can you ship out here to Alpha Centauri?" And then we'll probably have to take it off the website, but we'll see.
Now, Jeff, my curious mind just has to know what drives a person to found and own the largest meteorite company in the universe?
Gosh, that's an intriguing question. I'll try and give you a sensible answer. I have been smitten with meteorites, not physically, not actually hit in the head by one, but I mean amazed and delighted, fascinated with these visitors from outer space since I was a little boy. And as is so handy when you're semi-grown up, you can look back and go, "I blame my parents for this."
There you go.
So my father was an amateur astronomer. He was fascinated by the night sky, always setting up his telescope, usually fruitlessly because we lived at the southern edge of Greater London. I grew up in the UK. So the UK, of course, notorious for its cloudy skies, one of the least astronomy-friendly places on our planet. But my dad was a very persistent fellow. So we have these amusing, I have these amusing memories where I'm fast asleep and I'd be woken up and there's my father and he goes, "I'm taking you downstairs," and he'd wrap me up in a blanket and go out into the garden, into the freezing night air, and hold me up to his telescope and go, "Look, here's the moon and craters, or here's Saturn." And my poor mom, she'd go, "Don't wake the boy up, he's got school tomorrow." And she'd go, "He'll catch his death out there." And I'm thinking, well, if I get sick, I won't have to go to school tomorrow. So double bonus.
There you go.
Astronomy at night and not having to go to school. So I had this whimsical fascination with astronomy in the night sky. And I visited all the science museums in London when I was a kid and saw meteorites for the first time. And I was amazed by this. Well, look at this. Here, rocks from outer space that have landed on our funny little planet. And I was transfixed by this idea that you could touch something a little boy could put his hand on a rock that had traveled millions and millions of miles to be here. And at that time, in a fairly grandiose manner, in retrospect, I promised myself that one day I would have a real meteorite, little imagining it would become the prime directive in my life, as we Star Trek fans say. So it's been a lifelong fascination, but when I got a bit older, I read books, and I determined I would go out and search for visitors from space, and I had the good fortune to meet a strange character named Steve Arnold back in the 90s, who was searching for meteorites full-time, and I thought, what a crazy cat this guy is. And we became great friends, and he became my co-host on the Meteorite Men television show many years later.
You figure it's pretty crazy until you learn what these things are worth. Now, I've hiked, I would say, probably the great majority of Arizona, and I've stumbled across a couple of these meteorite searchers. And when Jennifer brought up the idea, let's bring in somebody that searches for meteorites, I said, you know, the guys I bump into looking for that stuff, isn't anybody you'd want to put on the radio program.
Those aren't the kind of guys we want to talk to, right?
Oh, my gosh, well said. I probably know the exact guys you're talking about, too. Because if you run into them randomly in the desert when you're hiking, it means they have to be out there all the time to even up the odds.
Yes.
And I know who the guys are. Kind of sunbaked out there in the Mojave. No, I'm really going to find the big one this decade.
Well, you know, the beacon of the big one, it was just last Halloween 2015, a skull-shaped meteorite the size of a battleship traveling 48,000 miles an hour just narrowly missed Earth. And that is discerning, kind of disconcerting. But then I found out it came from the blind side of the universe. Jeff, I didn't know we had a blind side of the universe.
We got blindsided?
Isn't that the name of the new science fiction show that's being developed? If it's not, it definitely should be.
Man, I thought we had telescopes looking in all directions.
We knew about all of these things. And how close did it come? Was it a near miss or a near hit?
About the distance the moon is away, I believe, is what
it's
I remember.
It's only a couple hundred thousand miles. That's not very far.
And in astronomical terms, of course, that is really close. But also, if you think, well, nearly a quarter of a million miles, something that comes within that's within the distance of the moon's orbit from us is regarded scientifically as a near miss, and that's just because the distances in space that we're talking about are so vast. So you raise an extremely important point. It's perhaps the most important point there is in any conversation. And that is that we, on our little planet Earth, wandering through space, face a very real danger of asteroid impact. And I'm not an alarmist. It's not likely to happen in our lifetimes or anytime soon. But when you study meteorites, you also end up studying craters. And so I have visited some of the largest craters on the surface of the Earth. And one of them, in the Tamir Peninsula in northern Siberia, it's really the end of nowhere out there. We had to be airlifted into this crater by helicopter in two teams. And that in itself was quite an adventure because these old army surplus Russian helicopters together with duct tape and chewing gum, and it was a pretty hair-raising ride, let me tell you. We're halfway to the crater, and the co-pilot gets up, comes out into the passenger area, and opens up all the portholes to get some. He says, "We get fresh air in helicopter." Never been on a plane before where they open the windows. Slightly disturbing experience. Anyway, we're dropped in this gigantic crater, which is 100 kilometers in diameter.
Holy.
So to give you a sense of scale, you could fit the country of Luxembourg into this crater four times.
Wow. Mm.
So what happens when a crater of that size is formed on the Earth? And that was about 35 million years ago it happened. The devastation is catastrophic. And there's an enormous heat wave. The temperature is so high that it melts the target rock, the rock on Earth, where this giant meteorite landed. So these events, and there have been many of them in Earth's past, shape the course of evolution. And a very large meteorite impact will cause what we call an extinction-level event. And that means all life within a certain radius of the impact is wiped out almost instantaneously. And a large part of the devastation is caused by the shockwave that is released by this impact.
I can to create a crater that big, how big do they project the actual object that hit Earth was?
That one was believed to be over a kilometer in diameter, possibly larger, and it's quite difficult to extrapolate back. But let me give you a more an example that's a little easier to visualize. And you mentioned a moment ago Meteor Crater here in Arizona.
A great stop.
We're very fortunate to have that in our home state, my adopted home state. It's regarded as the best preserved meteorite crater in the world. It's gigantic. It's spectacular.
It
and
is.
Any Arizona residents who haven't seen it, it's one of the geological wonders of the world. It's really extraordinary. So you stand on the rim of that crater and you look in, and it's almost like you're looking into a tiny country. It's so vast. But the meteorite that made that enormous crater is thought to have been about the size of, say, a New York brownstone building.
Wow.
A large house, a small apartment building. And that's, it would be big if you were standing next to it. But when you think about that in relation to the size of this vast crater, it seems very tiny. So a relatively small mass that is dense and traveling at tremendous velocity can form an enormous crater.
What is the tremendous velocity? I mean, how fast are these objects traveling?
Think about this. If you've ever looked up in the night sky in the middle of August, maybe watch the Perseids meteor shower or the Leonids meteor shower in November. These are they're called periodic showers. They take place at the same time every year. So a typical entry velocity might be 17 to 25,000 miles an hour. And it sometimes raises up maybe into 40 or 45,000 miles an hour. Now, most of those incoming bits of cosmic debris burn up in the atmosphere and are slowed down.
Thank goodness.
Luckily for us.
Wow.
Occasionally, we'll get a larger mass. And in the case of Meteor Crater in Arizona, it was an iron mass. It was iron and nickel, so extremely dense. And it has so much inertia that it just punches right through the atmosphere. It doesn't see the atmosphere in the same way that a smaller potential meteorite would. And those are the ones that cause devastation.
So our atmosphere was not much of a restriction.
No, it would be kind of like driving a sports car through a sheet of saran wrap.